Hello there, and welcome to this, the 143rd episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is Greg sitting in for Johnny tonight, but as usual, with me are James and John. Excellent.
John is excited. He's now the proud owner of Tony Gonzalez.
Absolutely thrilled to have Tony Gonzalez. Thank you. But please continue.
Glad to say, joining us for the first time in a little while is previews editor and PR manager these days, as he's ascended to those ranks, Nick DeMola.
What's up, guys? Long time no talk.
So how goes telling publishers that we panned all the crappy games they've been sending us lately?
Oh my. You know what? None of those assholes have any room to speak at all.
Did they respond when you tell them, yeah, we just gave your game a 3?
No, actually, pretty funny. Luke's review of 101 Explosive Megamix went up.
Explosive's the right word.
Yeah, terrible. Oh my god. So I've been emailing everybody reviews that we do. So no matter who puts up a review, someone's getting it in their inbox.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that Nick's doing for us these days. Very diligent. But one of the other things you're covering is Excitebots. You got this in this week, so you'll be reviewing it. Can you tell us what your initial impressions are? I don't think you've been able to play it that much, but
yeah, I've gotten a little bit of time in. I guess I'll start by saying that I was a pretty big Excite Truck fan, so when I saw Excite Bots come up, I was definitely all about that one. So far, I'd say initial impression is that it's really good, actually. It's a little weird. They made a lot of really interesting changes, I guess
so
you could
bad
say.
Bad changes. Is that what you're telling us?
I wouldn't say they're quite bad. I mean, when you really look at it, there wasn't much they could do with Excite Truck from the first point if they were to make an Excite
Truck
2.
Fix the music.
Oh, God.
They did fix the music. They put in SD card support before they took it out now. they fixed it all right.
They unfixed it.
Exactly. I see what you mean, Nick. I mean, in terms of you could have just done more tracks or whatever, but you know, that's about it. Whereas what they've done is they've put in these kind of weird little mini games and new tricks and all this sort of different ways of earning the stars that you got before from just like more straightforward stuff like how long you're in the air and stuff. So how does that kind of blend in with all the more normal elements of the game?
They did a pretty good job making it pretty seamless. I mean, all the same stuff that was in Excite Truck is still here, so you could still get like the big air, and you could still smash the other bots. You can throw them by hitting the little question mark blocks, like all that crap's still there. But they also got like all these really weird like the bars. So like all of a sudden you'll come up a hill and there'll be a red bar, and it'll automatically grab it, and you gotta like spin the Wii remote to spin your bot for like 10 rotations, and then it throws you. So there's stuff like that. But then as you go, there's like, all of a sudden you'll hit a question mark block, and instead of having something that changes the course itself, it'll like set up some bowling pins, or it'll like spawn a football that you could hit into and like kick a field goal. And every little thing that you do earns you stars. So it's what it's done so far. I don't know if this will stick or not, but it makes it like really easy to get a crap ton of stars. Like in Excite Truck, it got a little tough, but so far I'm not seeing it yet.
So would you say the changes they've made bring the game more in line with some of the more casual demographics on the Wii? So more closely mimicking some of the more casually themed games in Excite Truck, which it sometimes could be somewhat difficult. But
if you wanted to take it to the fullest, I mean, obviously it kind of had this tiered system, didn't it, where like, you know, obviously you got the different ranks, you had the super excite mode if you got all the medals, and you know, so it was kind of as advanced as you wanted to take it, but does this kind of make it more accessible, do you think?
I think it'll ramp up to being just as hard eventually. Right now it's definitely not. I want to say that it will. I can't really say yet. I haven't gotten far enough. But the theme of it and kind of all the wacky stuff going on, I think, will make it more accessible.
See, that's what I was more curious about. Is it does it feel more like a party game than or more in line with the kind of the party-ish games that the Wii has on it, aimed towards it more casual demographics.
I think that that's true. It has a lot of personality, which I think is true of a lot of Wii games. And that's something that Excite Truck kind of lacked. There was really nothing to it.
It had personality. It had...
They could have done. I mean, you could have just put the bark on your SD card, and they would have been a different
person. Well, you know, look, I'm disappointed to hear they took out SD card support, because there was nothing quite as good as racing through canyons to ballroom dancing.
Yeah. You can't beat it.
Yeah. So what is the music like now? Has that gone undergone the default music? Is that like undergone a personality change like the rest of the game?
Considering
we're gonna have
has.
To sit through it now.
It's better than the original crap that was on there. I mean, I didn't listen to much of it when I played Excite Truck, and I played good 100 hours probably of Excite Truck. So I put some time into that one, but the music here is probably more in line with Mario Kart type stuff. It's okay. Definitely more Nintendo like, but it's still not good. I mean,
okay. Yeah, so I guess we'll just go that far. If worst comes to worst, just sacrifice the sound effects and put your MP3 player on or your stereo, right. I suppose.
So would you say, actually, that's more of what I probably should have asked before. You say the game's closer to Mario Party now than it is a true racer?
No, I said Mario Kart.
Mario Kart. My apologies.
It's somewhere in between what Excite Truck was and what Mario Kart is. If that makes any sense. Sure. I don't know. It's hard to really qualify the game, because it's a lot like Excite Truck, but it's a lot different. It like has its own personality entirely.
It would be interesting to see like how it all balances out at the very high end, like, you know, whether you can rely on like the sort of tricks and the silly stuff to get your stars, or whether it becomes more leveraged on your ability to race and do crazy power slides.
And not fail, basically.
I would guess that that's true.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's true. I suppose, you know, there's something that you will be covering in your final review. Before we move on from ExciteBots, have you had a chance to try online very much?
Yeah, that was exactly what I was just going to bring up. I did play the online, and it is awesome. It is definitely the best addition to the game, I'd say. Flawless. It works better than any other Wii game I've played so far.
Even better than Mario Kart?
Yeah, I mean the lobby stuff isn't really there that was in Mario Kart. Like, it's not quite on the same level, but as far as getting into a match and getting going with a match, it's really, really smooth. It happens really easily. I didn't encounter any lag while racing. I didn't see anybody freezing up mid-race. That's pretty nice. And it looks like there's a few different modes. Like, you play the poker mode online.
The what?
And
there's a poker mode where you sort of, you have to collect like cards and like sort of like shuffle them about to get a good hand or whatever. It sounds kind of strange.
Weird.
It's really weird. I don't know. I don't really like poker very much to begin with, and I don't really care for it in Excite Bots either. But the actual racing stuff is really cool, and it's it allows you to like bet before each race. So you can like put some number of stars that you've earned in the single player or online onto, you know, your standing in the race, and you'll earn like double or triple that depending on what you do.
And these are actually sort of redistributable back to the game to unlock things. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So you will be like unlocking stuff in the actual game, like new bots or new colors for bots or I'm trying to think what else there was. But yeah, you'll wind up using them in the main game, which is kind of cool. So you can play a few online matches and really like rack up a crap load of stars really quick.
Yeah, it's sort of a different way of unlocking this. And anything else you'd like to grace us with, Nick, before we move on?
Not that I could really think of. Yeah, I've been pretty busy with doing PR stuff and just work in general. So, but ExciteBots is really good, and definitely if you liked Excite Truck, I'd recommend picking that one up. So
it's also not full price, right?
No, it's $40. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, $39.99, which is nice.
Right. Means it'll be on sale pretty soon. Well, Will, I'm serious.
It may well be. I'm very much looking forward to this. But I've noticed that it has now come out in America and does not have a European release date yet.
Just
for all time's sake,
hunger strike.
This is week one. This is week one.
Just for the record. Yep.
And the difference is I'm not actually playing it like I was playing Smash Brothers.
Yeah. So you're actually suffering along with
it. So it might not be on the magnitude of Smash Brothers, but I feel the pain more now. It's more honest this time. So
Greg is passing up the buffet table.
Yep. Now, we'll move on. James, understand you've burnished your Wario Land credentials by picking up the Virtual Boy version.
I have.
So, give us... This is quite legendary in a way, so fill us in. I'm really interested to hear about this.
Well, going into it, you said it is quite a legendary title. You know, everybody mentions it's the crowning achievement of the Virtual Boy.
Which is usually not meant in a kind of snide way.
Yeah, like, it's not.
But it could be.
it's a very literal sense. Uh-huh. It's the best game on the system. And, you know, I expected to go in there and be greeted with what I'm used to as the construct of the Wario Land games. Which is, you know, it's almost story-driven to an extent that Mario games aren't. Just insofar as giving Wario the opportunity to be funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
So the story is constructed in such a way that there are opportunities for the Wario character to be put in humorous situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is in part because the game's quite old. It's 14 years old now, I guess, 95.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that's not there. So basically it's just straight physical humor. And as far as I can tell, there's no story, which is what I wasn't really prepared for. So immediately I had kind of a down on the game. But as I played it, it is an enjoyable platformer. There is some variety in it, and not a whole lot, but like some of the abilities to gain powers, like it all comes in the form of hats that he wears.
Mm-hmm.
So like his standard big Wario is like a hat with like a Viking horns on it, and then he's got one that's like a dragon's head that shoots fire out of it. So they interact with the environment differently, so there are blocks you have the fire hat to burn so you can get through obstacles and get secret areas. So there is some treasure collection in the game. So in that respect, it does resemble other Wario games. The part of the game that is unique to it is the 3D elements, where there will be a foreground stage, which is where most of the level takes place on. And then there's a background stage that you can get to and sort of follow along in the background while things in the foreground are going on.
Yeah,
and
so this is how it actually uses the sort of Virtual Boy effect.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't seem obvious how a Wario Land, like a 2D platformer, would use it.
Right.
But this is how it does it with this background.
And there are other games that have done it since then. New Super Mario Brothers does it, doesn't it?
It's Super Paper Mario.
That's right, Super Paper Mario does, yes. Yeah, but at the time, you know, that was kind of a new a concept. That it did actually work really well. And a lot of times there'll be an obstacle you have to get around, and you could probably get around it in the foreground, but if you can find the way to get to the background, you can just skirt right past it and then usually pick up some kind of treasure back there. You know, it's a solid platforming Wario style game, and you know, maybe it's not the most polished game in the series, but that's not really all that surprising, given that it is an older game.
And it was obviously, I mean, it's, you know, with the Virtual Boy, it's all relative, I suppose, but, you know, it was an early game for the Virtual Boy, so, I mean, I imagine it didn't have, like, that much development time on it.
No, and I imagine it was the team's first experience with the Virtual Boy, which, I have to imagine, it might be the hardest gaming system to develop for your first time. Maybe ever.
Yeah, it's pretty quirky to say the least. I mean,
and it's not just a weird concept; it's a very strange piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I would say is that because this was the R&D one, they made the Virtual Boy. So I don't think there'd be anybody better situated to know what it was like.
True. But the team that designed the Virtual Boy and the people who made the game probably weren't the same.
No, they're not going to be literally the same people. But in terms of information sharing,
yeah, they have people they can ask
to the maximum extent.
And I think this game demonstrates why it's a shame the Virtual Boy didn't make it. Because there were some good ideas here that could have been worked on, and the system could have improved, but, you know, it didn't get the opportunity to.
And would you, like, venture to rank it with some of the other Wario Land games you've played? I mean,
it's better than the GBA ones.
You think? Well, there's only one GBA.
Well, the GBA one and then Master of Disguise. Definitely better than them.
Oh, well, yeah, that doesn't count.
It does count. I'm not quite sure where I'd rank it. It's hard to place in the context.
But you like it better than 4, which, I mean, 4's pretty good, I think.
I do like it a little bit better than 4, yeah.
Right, okay. And is there anything else that you want to share with us?
There's one other, maybe two. Did I talk about Red Alert last time we...
No, that was forthcoming, because it was 2 weeks ago, so...
Yeah, okay. I have gotten Red Alert, and it does cause eyes to bleed like one has.
Is this the worst one? Yes, this is the Star Foxy one.
This is
right?
The Star Foxy game. It's all range mode.
Oh, really?
Even though it's set in tunnels and things, the entire game is in all range mode. You can turn around and go the opposite direction. You can throw it in reverse. So yes, you can throw your airplane in reverse.
Love those planes.
It's kind of hard to tell what's going on sometimes if there's a lot of activity on the, I was going to say screen, but that's not the right word, on the projected image.
Viewfinder.
Because it's all wireframe, and the lack of color can make it really hard to say, okay, that's an enemy, that's an enemy, that's the background. So if all this stuff starts to kind of line up against each other, it can be a little difficult.
So what are the objectives like? So obviously, like, you think of Star Fox Command, most of the time it was just like kill a bunch of enemies for a while. Is that exactly what we're dealing with here?
It's get to the boss and kill it.
Yeah.
And you get to the boss just by shooting down a certain number of enemies or whatever?
You just fly straight through.
Oh, really? It's that straightforward. Okay.
Yeah, but you can turn around if you feel so inclined. The one thing with the Virtual Boy is that most of the games don't have saves. So, Wario Land has saves, and of the, I guess it's six games now I own, it's the only game that does.
Okay.
Some of them have saved scores, they don't have saved games. But this game does not have saves, meaning you have to beat the whole thing in one sitting.
Wow.
But presumably with some nice little auto breaks to prevent
you
from
with the auto breaks. It is functionally impossible to complete this game in one sitting. I've tried, and it just can't do it. And I mean, it's not because I was losing. And
one sitting, but the Virtual Boy's plugged in for like 2 days.
Yes,
and you just play. You just have to walk away. Very long, separated intervals.
But I'm worried about the mechanics of the Virtual Boy breaking at that point, because there are moving parts in that thing. Yeah. So it's not an easy thing to do, and I'm not sure anyone ever beat this game.
But do you like it? Do you think it plays well?
It plays okay. It's a little clunky, but. You know, it was doing all range mode before there was all range mode, and the game feels a little...
Yeah, well, I guess it was kind of probably a similar time to, like, Star Fox 2 was being made with all that stuff in, but of course that never saw the light of day.
It's a little slow, but that's partially because of the hardware. You know, it's not a very popular piece of hardware.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a Virtual Boy, it's worth getting. I mean, obviously, it's one of the more highly regarded games on the
system.
Well,
I guess it's another one. It's another kind of different use of the 3D.
Yeah, it is a very cool use of the 3D, and there is... I mean, the draw distance isn't huge, but you can see things coming at you pretty well, and they do get closer and get, you know, their 3D effect isn't full.
Right, yeah.
So it's kind of cool. Mm. And then the game I was actually going to talk about, if I hadn't talked about that one, is I've been playing 99 Nights, which all I'm going to say is it can be really hard. It's a 360 game, if you're not familiar. It's like a Dynasty Warriors game, but the idea is it's going to have more high fantasy story and more emphasis on the story and stuff like that. It's very hard sometimes, and there are no checkpoints, so if you lose, you have to restart the whole mission, which is fine, except for the fact that a lot of the missions are like 40 minutes long, and you lose in the very last boss battle.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
I replayed one mission up to the boss battle like 7 times.
My God, you're playing like the most punishing games ever right now.
I know. God. It's bad.
Yeah, don't forget, next week, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, everyone's going to be there.
Well, but I've beaten that game. I'm fine.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. No, exactly. I, it's not the most punishing game I've played either.
No, that's not even sadism to me anymore. That's just conventional.
Well, I should hope it's not sadism. Because what would that involve? Like, forcing someone else to play it?
Yeah. Well, we kind of did, didn't we?
Well, we didn't. It was look, I didn't participate in that poll. It was very close. I didn't want to swing it. So
I saw that it was close, and I immediately voted.
Okay, would you want to say who you voted?
Oh, I voted for Super Ghouls and Ghosts. I've been campaigning for it since we started this thing.
Well, we had to get it out of everybody's blood,
so,
I guess.
So you did inflict. You pretty much gave us the Clockwork Orange treatment, is what you say.
Basically. I didn't just vote for the game because I wanted to see people suffer. I voted for the game because I think it's
not just that, but definitely that was a big part.
that was a part, yes. But I also voted for the game because I feel like if you weren't playing games back in the SNES era, you know, you hear about, well, games were harder back then. but you don't really appreciate how a lot of these games...
You've got to live it. You've got to live
it. Well, it's not just that. I mean, you have to understand that a lot of these games were harder because they were arcade ports, and they were designed to kill you, so you had to put more quarters into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but Super Ghouls and Ghosts is not an arcade game.
No, but it is inspired by an arcade
game. Oh, no, it is, but it's interesting how much it kind of holds on to that. Anyway, there'll be plenty of time to discuss Super Ghouls and Ghosts in the appropriate
forum. I think it's not just for sadism, but because it's a game I think everyone should play.
I think it's a worthy title, so we'll move on. John, do you have news to share with us of any kind?
Yeah, I got a new job, actually, which is really cool because both my fiance and myself were laid off at one point. So certainly, I mean, for those that don't know, I'm getting married about a month from now. So for both you and your fiance to get laid off about
Good
a month
luck.
Before the wedding, yeah, it's kind of stressful. So
And you're gonna be away during E3, is that right?
Yeah, unfortunately or fortunately, either way. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, you know, on the one hand, I'll miss E3. On the other hand, I'll be going on my honeymoon to Turks and Caicos. So for a week. So that will definitely not suck. So, and believe me, I've informed everybody at the site.
Have you appointed someone to serve as your, you know, right
me,
hand?
Me,
well,
me,
see,
come
the,
on, come on,
the,
me.
You see, the
me.
Convenient thing is, no way, James, there's no way. I wouldn't let you babysit my cat.
Come on, John. I'm going to be there.
Nick would be my pick off the top of my head.
Oh,
since
yeah.
I think he's the only one that has any sense. But,
you bastard. You bastard, John. After everything I've done for you.
Yeah.
Everything he's done. All those reviews that he's done in a timely fashion.
All those reviews of the awards and all that kind of
awards
stuff.
Awards for you, John.
Yeah.
F you.
Yeah, so, well, that reminds me. So, John, I haven't seen the score for Age of Empires yet. I assume it's there. I mean, I just haven't checked.
It's just, you know, it's in my mind. I just haven't committed it to paper yet. So, it's just, you know.
To paper. That's encouraging.
To paper. He handwrites them first.
Are you going to fax it to TYP?
don't worry. He's already been on me about that.
I'm sure he has.
Yeah.
Have you been playing anything of note that you'd like to share before we move
Just some Super Metroid and, you know, pretty much I love it.
Yeah. I don't know whether we've mentioned this, but it is indeed good.
Yes. This just in. But yeah, so for now, I'm just kind of I'm basking in the afterglow of rejoining the workforce.
Well, I'm sure that must be a tremendous relief, mm-hmm. to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
I'll close out new business with what I've been playing. First of all, I want to kind of talk about Hatsworth, Henry Hatsworth. Over the past couple of weeks, I completed it. I pretty much gobbled up all my portable gaming time. FF4 kind of got pushed to the sidelines for quite a while. Because I really like it. I hate to be terribly predictable, but I did very much enjoy this game. And it is difficult, as advertised. I'm not quite sure it's as difficult as some people have kind of made out. I mean, it's definitely more forgiving than, like, your really old school 8-bit style stuff. In terms of, as soon as you get the wall jump, like, if you just miss a jump, he can, like, stick to the side of even quite a small platform. So you've got a little bit of margin for error there that you wouldn't have in, like, the, you know, 8-bit Castlevania or something. You know?
Yeah, one of those lady specials.
So it's extremely charitable, I suppose. But, I mean, for the rest of the game, there's parts of it, you know, that really remind you of some of those games. I mean, there's the underwater sections where you're jumping over big spiky mines. I mean, it couldn't be much more Mega Man.
Mm-hmm. No, even the wall jump is, you know...
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of things in there that remind you of older games.
Like the puzzles.
Yeah, older games like Tetris Attack, yeah. the pace of the game kind of reminds me of Beautiful Joe, though. In terms of, like, Beautiful Joe is kind of a game which would kind of stop and start quite a lot. Because, you know, you'd end up getting into a situation where you'd be, you know, faced with a whole bunch of enemies and you'd have to slow down time to beat them and stuff. You know, it kind of went from being quite quick to being quite slow. And this is kind of what happens with the switching between that and the puzzle. because sometimes it'll be, for instance, like you want to take out an enemy, so you'll shoot a projectile, but then you go into the puzzle to kind of power up the projectile, so that'll stop for a little while. And the difficulty is kind of reminiscent of Beautiful Joe. And these like sort of kill room kind of things where the platforming kind of stops, and it's just like, okay, a fixed number of enemies will spawn onto the screen over a certain length of time, and you've got to kill them all, and that's it, which is something that Beautiful Joe did. So it does remind me of that, and that's, I love that game. That's a very good thing. The only sort of problem I have with it is some of the later levels, which have, you know, pretty long, drawn out, kind of difficult platforming parts, also have a lot of these kill rooms, and it's just after a while you're like, just mercy, please, just stop. This is going on too long. You know, especially when you're like trying to manipulate the puzzle to keep your health up, to power up your projectiles, it just goes on and on and on. And it's, it's not so much the difficulty that I found kind of grating at that point, but just the sheer length. You know, you could have difficult levels at the end of the game without making them really long. So I kind of would have liked that they were all broken up. But overall, it's fantastic. If you like older kind of traditional games, you know, sort of throwback games like that, go and get it, because it's really, really good. And the other thing I've been doing this week is some Japanese Virtual Console arcade stuff. Now, very much like the Virtual Console before it, it already has way more games than everyone else does. Like, it's got 11, which, what have the rest of us got? Like, 4?
Yeah,
I want to say
like that.
Still 4 from like from when it went live at GDC.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty much, they've been updating it once a week at least since GDC.
Wait, so they've actually done multiple updates in a week at some point?
Yeah, they did. I think Mappy and something else came out in the same week.
Oh, God.
So,
yeah,
but
great.
The ones I've been playing, Space Harrier to start with.
Yes.
Nice. That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Sega kind of arcade classic from 1985.
It is a very old game. It is, in fact, a game that is older than me. John was just learning to drive.
I believe I was just retiring at that point.
yeah, you're coming out of retirement though, aren't you?
Yep.
Well, so yeah, this is from 85, and it must have blown people's heads off back then. I mean, it is still intense.
It is.
It's like a rail shooter kind of thing. It uses sprite scaling, you know, what was referred to as Mode 7 on the Super NES kind of stuff. But it's very fast at times, extremely fast. It's got this kind of psychedelic thing going on with the sort of like checkerboardish floorings, like almost like Sonic went on to do.
Yeah. So you could tell the speed.
Yeah, exactly. It gives that sensation of speed, especially like this bits where it kind of, you get like a roof enclosing it over you, and that's like very trippy and very fast. So it's very intense, and it's simple. You know, I mean, you can't shoot like in a direction independent of the position of your guy. So it's pretty much just like moving around constantly. And you know, this is a game where it matters how quickly you press the fire button. You know, it's one from that kind of era.
That's really awesome. All this game comes down to is how fast can you hit that fire button?
Yeah, how fast can you move around, and like, you know, you have to process things more. Like, you know, you've got the primary way that you die in this game is the sort of indignity of running into a big tree or a post.
Son
of a bitch!
Very precisely observed recreation.
Yes, I've heard it many times.
Was this Yu Suzuki's first Sega game?
I think it may be one of the, because it's so early.
It's his second. His first one was Champion Boxing.
Nice.
Yes.
It is simple, and it's a total blaster. There's a lot of repetition and stuff, but it's fun. It is 800 points in Japan. I don't know whether it will be elsewhere, although you kind of suspect it will be, considering there are inferior versions available for like 500 points.
Yeah.
800 points like on Genesis and Master System on the Virtual Console. So, you know, you would have thought they'll make you pay for the proper.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it must have been, those versions must be a real insult to them.
They are actually quite bad. And it's funny because this game was ported. They're probably like 30 systems.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of, I think, like 32X even.
But in fact, this game was on a Nintendo system. It was actually on the Famicom because Sega didn't have a console at the time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I guess this was kind of important in building Sega's popularity.
Yeah, it really was.
And that's why there was a version on the Master System, even though it was kind of a travesty, because it's like that was...
And when I say it came out on everything, there's a version for the ZX Spectrum, the Amiga, the Amstrad, the CPC...
Yeah, I'm sure they were all good. John, were you going to chime in?
Well, I mean, it came out at a time when Sega was, you know, really, they were making arcade games primarily, and it was just like Outrun. Yeah. It was one of their hugest titles. So they completely hoarded out to everything, and also they made sure that it was one of their marquee titles on every single console they ever made. I mean, it's right up there with, you know, like I said, Outrun, Phantasy
Afterburner.
Star. Yeah, all those kind of games. Like, it's one of those big, like, classic Sega games.
Yeah, so it's a cool, it's a really nice thing to have Arcade Perfect, obviously, being on Virtual Console Arcade. It controls fine with the classic controller. I've got no issues with that. Because obviously, like, the other problem with those console versions must have been you having to use the D-pad.
Yes.
So this is much better using the classic controller. And I mean, if you've got like an arcade stick for like Tatsunoko versus Capcom or something, maybe you could use that. And that
could be actually pretty cool. Here's a fun piece of trivia for this game. It was one of the first, if not the first, arcade games where the player sits down.
Yeah, so I mean that brings me also to the next game I've been playing, Star Blade. This is from Namco, 1991. This is one of the early polygonal sort of rail shooters. This was heavily referenced when Star Fox was coming out, because Star Fox looks quite a lot like it.
Yes.
Yeah, the sort of flat shaded polygons, little flashing kind of weak spots on the enemies and all that. You know, it looks kind of similar, but Star Blade looks quite a lot better, to be honest, because it runs a lot faster. There's actually a lot more geometry to it. You know, like, for instance, like when you're in the asteroid field in Star Fox, they're not polygonal. They're just little sprites coming towards you, whereas in this, they are actually, you know, fully 3D and everything. So, and the cabinet for this originally was quite complicated. It had a seat, it had like mirrored screens, it had quadraphonic sound, it had, you know, all this stuff. It was kind of like a game / you know, space flight simulator kind of thing.
Well, it had a concave mirror that a TV projected up into, and then the player actually saw the game on this mirror. And because of the shape of the mirror, things looked like they were further in. So it actually gave you that enveloping feeling
of
space.
It gave you something of a depth of feel kind of thing going on.
And that was kind of a concern that I have for this game, because how does it feel when it's just flat like that?
Yeah, well, it's like I said, so you're losing all of that, which is a shame. You know, that was a big part of the arcade experience with this, I'm sure, and you're losing all of that. You know, like, I think it had force feedback in the seats or, you know, all sorts of stuff.
I think it did, yeah.
You're losing all of that, but it's still interesting as kind of a historical kind of thing, and it's still pretty fun. It's simple, because the big difference with Star Fox is that with Star Fox, you maneuver the R-Wing. In this, you are strictly on rails. You're like, you know, which kind of allows it to do like little flourishes, like, you know, yeah, the whole view spinning as you're kind of doing barrel rolls and all evading like fire and stuff. But it's gameplay wise, the only thing it's leveraged on is your ability to shoot stuff rather than to dodge stuff.
I think the story was you were operating cannons on a ship. So
yeah, you weren't piloting it. You were like the gunner. Yeah. So you know, it's more simple than Star Fox in that respect. It's still pretty fun, and you know, I haven't played that much of it yet, but I assume this and Space Area, especially Space Area, will be coming to the American and European VC arcades fairly soon. But God knows, I mean, if the Japanese are already 7 ahead, it could take quite a while.
Yeah, I could see them making Space Area a priority, though.
Yeah, Space Harry is coming soon, because they said that at GDC. But some of this other stuff, I don't know. All right, well, that's going to bring an end to new business, and we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be coming back with listener mail and a little catch-up with what's been going on in the news. So see you on the other side. And we're back with listener mail. We're going to start with a quick follow-up to the Super Metroid show that we did last week. Not that the response has been particularly abundant or anything, so perhaps this is not a good idea. But there's a couple of people that wrote in that I wanted to just to read their thoughts, because I thought it was nice, and I'm very grateful for them to providing them to us. So the first was from Doug. He wrote in, unfortunately, it was just after we recorded the show.
It actually came in as we were finishing up.
And before we before it went out, obviously, so we couldn't use it during the show, and we didn't have enough to do an actual segment during the show itself. But he had plenty of interesting thoughts, especially about the storytelling in the game. But here's some of the things that he liked, like the little touches. So he says, outside of Craig's door is what looks to be a forgotten soldier. After defeating Ridley, there is the broken canister. And, of course, in Tyrion, the dried-up enemies and sense of dread. When the Metroid finally reveals itself, your first instinct is to fight it. But when it leaves you alive with one point of energy left, the whole narrative comes into focus. It's one of the most powerful aha moments in gaming. Everything from that point on has a different meaning. And we also got on the subject of the Metroid lava, which is kind of curiously important in the story in many ways. Sophia writes, what sticks out most to me in the game is the tremendous emotional impact that Metroid Sacrifice had on me. For a game with limited dialogue, it told an emotional story of sacrifice. So it's really interesting. Like when I was playing the game, I was kind of like always kind of a bit like confused, like you when you die you have that thing of like, do you want to sort of, it shows the little Metroid lava, mm-hmm. and like, do you want to sort of start looking for it again? And I was kind of like, well, surely it's just been raped and, you know, multiplied into a million of them by now, mm-hmm. but I guess that's the thing. It's trying to sort of keep it in mind that that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to save it. It's not just like you're going to kill Mother Brain or whatever. But of course, when you, as Doug mentioned, when you defeat Ridley, the little container that it was in originally, you see broken. So at that point, you know that it's been messed with. And then, of course, you discover it in Tyrion. And so I guess that's the really cool thing is that, you know, for a company that has this sort of long history of you know, the thing, just rescuing stuff is the game. Obviously, go back to Donkey Kong and Princess Peach and Princess Zelda, you know, it's always rescued somebody. This was, I think there's an argument, so the Metroid Lava is the best princess in a Nintendo game from that point of view, because it actually, you know, you gets you to sort of care about it, and then it has this big payoff at the end with it sort of giving its life for you, but just after it seemed like it was going to kill you.
Well, the thing is, what I always found with the Metroid is that it was sort of like an animal to me that didn't really know what it was doing. It was just kind of trying to survive. So in that way, I kind of had an empathy for it, I guess. You know, so it made me like that. It made it easier to like.
Yeah, I think that's why it's kind of more, it kind of feels like it needs rescuing, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. in a kind of meaningful way, rather than just like, oh, well, it's the damsel in distress kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely one of the most effective ways of that kind of motivation in a game for, like, you know, why you need to get to the end. I mean, not that it's incredible or anything necessarily, but I just think most games it's sort of totally perfunctory and you just don't give a shit at
See,
all.
And to go back to the idea of you calling it the best princess in a Nintendo game, I actually view it more like a child.
Yeah, I mean, that is what it is.
This is a mother and child relationship.
The way it has the little, like I said, on that game over screen, like the little cries and all that. I mean, clearly, and it's definitely a better child than Baby Mario because it screams less irritating.
And you actually want to save it as opposed to, you know, Baby Mario, where you just wish it would die?
I begrudgingly didn't throw myself off the cliff just because I love Yoshi so much, you know. So
decisions.
But it's kind of the only way that would work is because they made Samus a female character.
That's true. I mean, yeah. I guess in some ways it's a more natural.
It's the first time they really showed her as being feminine beyond her taking the suit off.
The maternal instinct sort of part of it. Yeah.
And I think how she interacts with it a little bit at the end is somewhat maternal, but how it interacts with her is very childlike and very much more like a child sort of playing with its mother.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it's just the kinds of things you don't get in other Nintendo. We haven't gotten in other Nintendo games. So I think that's why it's so memorable.
I think we got that in Mario Kart with Baby Peach.
That's it. It's gone. It's jumped the shark. Yeah. Right, we're moving on to the rest of the listener mail. James, you have the first one.
All right. So Patrick in Canada writes, music customization. It was Nick Sightruck and Endless Ocean. In light of allowing larger SD cards, should this not be the new standard on Wii games?
Standards? You're looking for standards?
As a music fan, I really enjoy changing the in-game music while still being able to listen to the game sound effects.
Shouldn't one friend code be the standard?
How come I got this thing? I mean, this is the funniest letter we've had in weeks.
Yeah, there's a reason why I picked this timing-wise.
Playoffs?
Playoffs? Alright, it just gives a fresh feel and adds to replayability. Oh, man. What do you guys think?
Well, I agree that it's really nice to be able to preserve the sound effects. I think it does add to the replayability. I mean, Nick, you were talking about how many hours you put into Excite Truck. I mean, you probably was very much helped along by the music on the SD card feature.
Well, there's nothing quite like going down any of those tracks with some System of a Down in the background. So
System, Metallica.
Well, I throw on some Rick Astley usually.
No, God, no.
Yeah. Never gonna give you
but,
up.
You know, I mean,
never gonna let you down. Yeah, I was Rick rolling the podcast. Sorry.
Thank you.
That was necessary.
That has been done, and it has been done better than we could possibly ever do.
No, it has been done worse than we could possibly do. Let's make that clear.
Depending on your point of view, in terms of the chilling accuracy of it, it's been done better than we.
Yes, I'll say that.
So the point that's sad about this email is that, you know, it's all about it becoming a standard when, in fact, the ExciteBots example shows that we're going backwards on this. you know, in fact, Endless Ocean was a minor step back. Well, not really a minor, it's quite a significant step backwards that you could only take one song with you when you dived.
Well, it's much like when it's much like when you go out on an expedition where you're...
Yeah, that's the thing as well. They've managed to create the sort of the pressure-resistant iPod, but unfortunately it only has enough memory in it for one song. So, I mean, that's just... Mm-hmm.
And that song will loop endlessly until you escape your ocean with invisible walls.
So Nick,
I was just saying, do you guys think that that's a result of
laziness?
Kind of when they did the photo channel update.
That's right. So they've moved away from MP3, haven't they? Mm-hmm. Photo channel has AAC now. DSI has AAC.
I mean,
you could hypothetically have just done ExciteBots with AAC support card, but did they think, you know, a lot of people just have MP3s, it'd be inconvenient, so let's not bother?
Well, it would be inconvenient.
I could only think, it sounds like a Nintendo way of doing it. It makes sense to me. So.
They just didn't want to pay for the license to use the codec? I mean, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
They probably already use it in the game.
But it is a weird one how we've gone, you know, especially because, I mean, with the title, I mean, it's sad that so many other games that could have been. I mean, I think a racing game really benefits because you do want to preserve the sound effects to preserve the sensation of speed and all the other crazy stuff that's going on in something like an Excite Truck or Excite Bots. You know, the sound effects is you want to maintain, but on the other hand, you know, it's not narrative, it's not like a score, so other music can complement it better, you know, because you like that music and so
fighting games is similar.
And yeah, it's just sad. I think this is pretty much in terms of any kind of move towards using it more, like now that they're, I mean, it's not really directly related, like the liberalization of the SD card use, but you know, any hope for that is gone, because if there's one game they would use it for, I guess it would be the game that has the precedent.
Built on the engine that already has support built into the engine.
And also just the fact that the fans of the previous game have those expectations built in, so there's more pressure to actually fulfill those expectations, isn't there?
See, if you need proof of that, go back about 35 minutes in the podcast where I expressed my disbelief that the game didn't have this support in it.
Exactly. So that's the point, is that, you know, once people have expectations of something, you're more obliged to fulfill them again, and they haven't done that. So if you're talking about, you know, new and unrelated games, or Endless Ocean 2 that's coming at some point this year, presumably, then it's probably not going to happen for those either, is it? So it's a real shame.
But by the way, is Endless Ocean one of the most ironically named games in recent memory?
There's a definite irony to that name. I will concede that, absolutely. All right, we're going to move on to the next question. John, you've got it.
All right, the next one is from Adolf Vega in Denton, Texas, and he writes, I know that having online leaderboards for arcade games is out of the question for Wii Virtual Console arcade games. However, do you think Nintendo will edit the code to include the current top five scores? Seeing Billy Mitchell, he is a douchebag, at the top of the Donkey Kong high score table when you play it at home would be very badass and not that difficult to do.
Well, I think it is equally out of the question, even though it's easier, because they will not do anything to change these, presumably.
No, they won't.
But I see his point. That is a terrific way to motivate you to play Donkey Kong if they ever did that on
yes.
the PC. Okay.
I want to be motivated by the score of a guy who spent 20 years playing a game
yeah.
as his primary function in life.
Yeah, I don't think you're very likely to ever be able to assail Billy Mitchell's record on Donkey Kong or Steve Wiebe, depending on who holds it at any given moment, for those who have seen King of Kong.
Oh, we need to go see him at E3.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. Steve Wiebe is going to attempt a sort of assault on the high score at E3 this year.
Oh, I think I'll skip that.
Oh, come on. Have you seen King of Kong, James?
Yes, I've seen King of Kong.
It's Billy Mitchell, he seems like a character out of The Office.
He is a character.
Yeah,
he does not seem real. He's as real to me as Dwight Schrute. It does not make sense that he exists.
No. I mean, it couldn't be any more bizarre that his profession is selling hot sauce. I mean, it's like, when it got to that, when that was revealed, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Sure, why not?
Exactly. You're like, perfect. You know what? I could not have thought of a more fictional character than him.
No, he is incredible. Yeah, and I mean, isn't it talk they're doing like an actual theatrical film of this or something?
I thought they were doing a musical or something like that.
That would be good. Awesome beyond words.
Yeah, the Twin Galaxies song or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if that's true, then they are making like a Broadway musical of this. Every theater in Broadway needs to burn down. Because society has regressed beyond saving.
I think it's as good a topic as anything to indulge in musical theatre about.
Why not?
But, I bet that the high score things with Virtual Console Arcade in general, obviously a lot of these games are kind of high scorey, but you're not limited by the amount of money you put in. Obviously, you just press a button to add a credit, and with some games, like, they don't compensate for that. Like, they don't have a thing where, like, if you die and you run out of lives or whatever, that you, like, your score gets halved or you get punished.
Right.
So it kind of limits the usefulness of the high score tables on the thing, because it's just like, you, even just for yourself, you might not remember, like, did I do that score using 4 credits, whereas I did this one with 3? Or, you know, it's just kind of, I guess you'd have to, like, be very disciplined and for yourself. And say,
I cannot continue. I don't think Space Harrier resets your score. I think it lets you continue on.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to have different modes.
Right.
Like, you would have to have a mode where, you know, no continues are allowed kind of thing.
We call that the unfun mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the high score element is kind of not so, I don't know, with some of these arcade games, doesn't seem like it's quite as exploitable as it could be in terms of, like, if it were
exploitable.
Like a, well, you know, for fun, you know, in terms of, like, if it was like a retail release or you know, like a WiiWare game or something, they would redo it to provide some sort of structure, so the scores really meant something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's just like, well, I can just keep adding credits, well, it's kind of all piggledy-piggledy. It doesn't really, you know, so it's kind of limited how much fun you can get out of some of these games in a high score sense, I think, because of that.
Well, and they're very simple games, and they're pretty repetitive too, so there is going to be a point where just getting, you know, a couple thousand more points in Space Harrier isn't really going to be that much more appealing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's quite, I mean, with some people, you get locked in on a certain thing, you know, it's amazing how much fun you can get out of it, but it, I mean, it's true, I think. That's especially because, you know, it's not like the old days where you'd be paying some obscene amount of money for, like, you know, Star Blade on the 3DO or whatever. Mm-hmm. you can enjoy these kind of, you know, as they're meant to be enjoyed, really, so the short bursts and, you know, just for the novelty of it. Okay, well, we're going to move on to the news. This is not necessarily the most current, because obviously we've been doing a lot of other stuff with the Super Metroid episode and the retroactives and stuff for that, and obviously we'll be moving on to more of that next week. So I thought we'd catch up, talk about some of the things that have been going on in the scene recently.
So first off, Nintendo's new console has a name. It's called the Wii.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, that is a ridiculous name. Mm-hmm. I'll never catch on. Now, the March MPDs is the first thing we're going to talk about. Nintendo on top, as usual, in North America. Wii sold 600,000 units. DS sold 563,000 units. But the story here was that it was actually, for the first time this year, it was a drop on the previous month's sales, I think. And also, it was a drop year on year compared with March 2008. So there was a little sort of concern about that, but I kind of find it interesting, like, why it's particularly concerning for two reasons. Number one, last year in March, Super Smash Bros. Brawl came out.
Yes.
Which is quite a big deal, and probably contributed to I'm sure there was a lot of people who are maybe more traditional Nintendo fans that maybe had not quite been swayed to buy a Wii yet, but, you know, not even perhaps by Galaxy, although Galaxy was quite new at that time. And then Smash Bros. Was the tipping point, you know, and a bunch of it. So that probably did drive enhanced hardware. So let us not forget, Smash Bros. Itself sold in the region of 2.7 million copies.
And we should also point out, at the time, there wasn't market saturation. The system was
exactly. I mean, you know, this is and of course, at the time, we weren't in the middle of a very significant recession.
Yes.
So there's a number of so there was a fall year on year of 16.7%, but I really don't think that's anything to be alarmed about at all.
No,
everybody,
not at all.
Everybody was down except for the 360, which had a monster month because of Resident Evil 5.
Yeah, but see, but the weird thing with that is that you know how Microsoft was always crowing about how they're finally making money. They actually, in their last quarter, they actually lost money again.
Yeah, they did, but
I don't know how they did that.
Maybe because they're selling too many of those arcade style units that are really marked down, and maybe they're taking a loss on that.
Maybe
that's what it is. But I mean, so I think the figures hardware wise are actually pretty healthy under the circumstances, and we're certainly expecting for the DS a very significant bump next month when the DSi comes along.
Which didn't quite sell like they were expecting it to, though, did it?
I'm more familiar with the UK numbers, that apparently it was the fourth biggest hardware launch ever, which, considering that it is, in fact,
not a hardware launch at all.
Yeah, considering it's the third iteration of a hardware in itself, that is pretty impressive. But
On the lead-up, though, we were hearing stories there'll be massive sellouts, you know, there's no chance you'll be able to find one. And
I think there was some worry that the supply would be short, whereas in the end, I don't think it was quite as tight as people anticipated.
It was a reverse of there's a million of them.
I think we'll see certainly the DS do well next week. But I'm not sure what the concern is particularly in that context, but what's more interesting to me is what we saw in the software numbers. First of all, according to Pachter over at Wedbush Morgan, he said that overall Wii software sales were lower in March 2009 than they were in March 2008.
This is true.
Now, the interesting part of that is, so you say, well, Smash Brothers came out last year. That sold 2.7 million units in itself. Fine. That is a humongous kind of anomaly that is not going to be repeated. But he said, even when you kind of correct for that, the software sales were basically stagnant. And the shocking thing about that is there were so many Wii sold between March 2008 and 2009 that the install base in North America actually doubled. So with double the amount of people to buy software, the software sales didn't go up. That is remarkable.
Yeah.
This does go back to what people have been saying all along, that this is a system that people buy and it just sort of sits around.
Well, I think it really lends more sort of powerful credence to that than we've heard before, to be honest. So I think it's more
what
persuasive.
Happens is they buy it, you know, play Wii Sports, buy Wii Fit.
Wii Fit is a big deal.
And that's probably it.
Because I think Wii Fit is really has sold hardware to people, no doubt. They're
absolutely
buying Wii Fit, and Wii is just the necessary gateway to that. So doubling kind of overstates the amount of people that have actually come along to buy, that could buy further games, maybe in that sense. But and also, I mean, maybe it is related to the state of the economy as well.
Well, I mean, game sales in general were down.
Yeah, I mean, it was not. I mean, so if we look at what charted in the top 10, Nintendo-wise, it was some of the usual suspects. Wii Fit, Mario Kart, Wii Play. Pokemon Platinum came in number 2 with 800,000. It's Pokemon, of course.
I mean, it's 805,000?
805,000.
Yeah, for a retread of a previous game, which is pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. That's fine, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure they're very pleased with that. And then RE5 cleaned up, because the 360 version sold over 900,000 units at number 1, and then the PS3 version came in over just under 600,000 units at number 4, so... Not bad at all for them, but no. You didn't have a humongous seller like Smash Bros. Brawl, but then, I mean, that is a one-off. So, but yeah, I think the point is just interesting. I mean, there's so many things going on with the economy, and the launch schedule for Nintendo is very different this year. It's been exceptionally quiet in the first half of this year, whereas it was exceptionally busy last year.
Very, very quiet.
I mean, you think about it. We had Smash Brothers.
John Sive over there.
We had Smash Brothers last year, this huge spike, and that was before Mario Kart and Wii Fit within a couple of weeks at each other that are still in the top 10 now.
Yes.
I mean, how huge was that period?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about the sort of aggregate software situation. Getting into the details, Mad World. So this apparently is said to have sold 66,000 copies in the what would have been about 2.5 weeks that it was on sale during March.
So adjusted, that's still barely cracking 100,000 copies.
Well, and that apparently was the 9th best-selling Wii game, for the record, of the month. So a lot of people said that, oh, you know, this is the one that people are going to look at, that, you know, they're going to track how well this sells, and then maybe if it does sell well, there'll be more mature-rated sort of content for Wii from other publishers. If it bombs, there won't be. I think Mad World's really niche.
It really is.
It's not just a beat 'em up. It's a hyper-violent beat 'em up.
It's this hyper-violent beat 'em up. It's super stylized, and you know, I think the problem with it is that for people, it's going to appeal most to the people like us who are in the know, who like the look of the style, that know about the pedigree, you know, Platinum and all that.
They didn't really advertise the game that much either, so even though the game exists.
Well, I think part of the problem is people like us who are in the know have read reviews and know that the game is short, and even you who reviewed it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not buying it.
Buying it either.
Well, yeah. I bought it and haven't played it, for the record.
Well, you've just by buying it, you've completed half of the game. But I mean, you're at 50% already.
But no, but Nick is absolutely right. That's the problem, is that this game is primarily going to appeal to those people on the one hand, but on the other hand, they're going to say, I can rent it, I can wait until it comes down in price.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't think this was a game that was ever likely to sell in big numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it really appeals to a niche audience, but but that audience is also the one that will judge it the most harshly. So anybody looking from the outside in is going to say, wow, you know, it's probably really not worth my money because...
So I don't think it makes for a particularly useful litmus test of, you know, like, I don't think... Like, say, for instance, if one were to extrapolate out to, say, a GTA game on Wii... I don't think it's necessarily that informative. But on that subject, Chinatown Wars, which came out, I believe, towards the end of March, right? It was about the 20th or... So this didn't have too... have too much time on sale during March, but it didn't chart in the top 20. The estimates are that it sold somewhere around 100,000, probably somewhat less than that, copies, which made it the 5th best-selling game on the platform of the month, which is, you know, I mean, not, I suppose, inconsiderable. It's got a beaten out by all the mainstays and Professor Layton, which is undergoing this sort of renaissance with the new marketing. But so it didn't do that well, but... do you think that in its first month, I mean, do you think that it's not Brain Training, it's not Layton, it's not Nintendogs, but do you think this can have legs on the DS?
This will. I think it will.
I it might have a slow burn,
it's bound to.
I mean, I agree with Nick. I think it's destined for it because there's a lot of DSs out there, obviously. And I think there's a lot of people that own a DS that might not use it that often. They might primarily game on 360 or PS3. And, you know, they kind of forget they have a DS to some extent. They don't buy games for it regularly. They're not necessarily, you know, reading news and reviews about it regularly. And I think when you get this positive word of mouth that's been building up for Chinatown Wars, so, you know, the friends get it and all that, you know, all the reviews have been great and all that, that people will get around to buying it. You know, it's something they kind of, they're interested in right now. They haven't quite done it yet, but they have a DS. They've got all the ingredients to buy it, and it will happen over time. And I don't think it'll be a huge hit.
Well, I think it was really released in the shadow of the console release, because, I mean, I think that the effects of the console release, you know, on 360 and PS3 is still being felt to a certain degree. And
well, especially with Lost and Damned. Because GTA 4 is a year ago now. It was about 11 months before Chinatown Wars came out, but, you know, Lost and Damned was just a couple of months ago.
And that was that wasn't just like a little bit of DLC. I mean, it was
a big deal.
Yeah. It's like 20 hours worth of content.
But I think as time goes on and more people play it and more people get ready to play it, you know, they put a bit of distance between it, they probably see that it's quite different. It is quite a tailored experience for the DS.
I think it was a big prove it kind of game, because even myself who reviewed it, I felt before I had even played it or anything that I was kind of turned off to it just because it was a top-down 2D one, and I had a lot of fears that it wasn't going to be like the other GTA games. And then you play it and you see it and you realize that really it's a 3D GTA game just shown from an isometric perspective. It's really
right,
the same
game. So it does hit the same sort of notes as the other ones. And that's the thing. I think that sense will sort of permeate throughout the people that have DSs, but that generally play these kinds of games. And over time, you'll see it sustain a certain amount of sales and do pretty well.
See, I don't think it's going to have the kind of slow burn we're used to, though. I think we're used to slow burn.
I mean, if we're talking about Mario Kart DS, definitely not that.
I think we're used to these slow burns where, you know, it gets respectable numbers every month. I think what we're going to end up with is smaller numbers every month. So maybe like it'll get down to 15,000-20,000 a month, but it could hold that for a year or two.
I think it definitely has the potential for, you know, for some sort of lasting success. And, you know, certainly just the fact that game is probably going to be riding on the top of the Metacritic list for DS like forever.
Yeah.
Well, they've spent absolute ton of money developing the game. And they did.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm speaking from the experience of the UK, but it was quite heavily marketed. I mean, TV, print, it was there. I mean, they made an effort. This was not, you know, I mean, Pachter was going on about, oh, you know, with the DS, all the marketing is, you know, Liv Tyler doing this, that, and the other. Well, that's Nintendo's marketing. They're not mutually exclusive.
I think what we're going to have here, though, is that people are going to buy this game like I bought this game. You know, I don't buy a whole lot of DS games because my default reaction is I prefer to play games on consoles.
Yeah.
And I went in and just, you know, all right, I need a game.
I think it's a game that everybody will get around to buying at some point.
Yeah, and it has a saliency as well.
Yeah.
This is not something that, you know, because there's a certain amount of buzz around it when it comes out, but then people kind of forget it exists. You know, because it's, you know, if they're still shopping for a DS game, they still see something called GTA. They still know what that means. You know, that brand is not going to lose its currency over any period of time. Okay, well, we'll move on. The next thing is that we had the details on the Wii Motion Plus and Wii Sports Resort launch dates. Kind of supposed to get these earlier, basically. Seems like they got pushed back a little bit. So we'll just clarify again. For the US, it's June the 8th for the Motion Plus, so that's coming, you know, first. And then about 8 weeks later, on July 26th, is Wii Sports Resort.
You all can't see this, but I just facepalmed the hell out of my face for that one right now.
So, I mean, I guess, I mean, and then for the rest, Europe is June 12th and July 24th, so they're a little closer together, about 6 weeks. So I'm kind of pleased about this because I'm really enthused for Tiger Woods this year, and I would like to be able to play that with Motion Plus, like, earlier than having to wait for Wii Sports Resort to roll around. But commercially, I mean, where do you think this leaves Nintendo?
I think it's the dumbest decision that they've made regarding a piece of hardware yet. Nintendo's philosophy for releasing little hardware add-ons for the Wii has been bundled in-game with the hardware.
Yeah.
It's failed for them yet, with the exception of Link's Crossbow Training?
That's actually quite successful. It really is. Like,
but I mean, has
best...
it failed for a piece of hardware to catch on?
No, it hasn't. And here's the real question. Just the fact that these bundle, and it will be bundled with Tiger Woods in America.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Does the fact that exists really damage it? Or, you know, it's going to be like, okay, a lot of the people that are going to be buying Wii Sports Resort because they bought a Wii with Wii Sports, obviously, and they love Wii Sports, and they want to buy another Wii Sports, they probably aren't going to know that Wii Motion Plus
has
already
been on
the market.
It's not a matter that it's going to damage it. I think it's that if they really want to get this thing out there, and their goal, as they've stated it, is that they want this to be, you know, an accessory that everyone has with their Wii, they should have come out with it, you know, really had things going basically on all cylinders. They should have put it with Wii Sports Resort.
So I mean, you're saying that perhaps, you know, the development on Wii Sports Resort encountered some difficulties, and this is something they wouldn't wanted to have
right.
to do.
I think.
But they've ended up having to do this because basically people like EA and Sega's Virtua Tennis as well had configured their development schedules to have a Wii Motion Plus game out at the launch of Wii Motion Plus, and it turns out that Wii Sports Resort has got pushed beyond that.
And I think if Nintendo had their way, they would delay Wii Motion Plus for Wii Sport.
But at this point, the developers, they'd be screwing over EA.
Yes, oh, definitely.
You know,
and you don't want to screw over EA. EA's just... They've just now repaired their relationship with
you. Yeah, and I mean, really, you'd be screwing them over for what? You know, I mean...
I think there's enough separation there in the end that, you know, it's not... I don't think it's necessarily going to confuse people that much.
No.
It's not a confuse issue. I think it's just this isn't how they wanted this piece of hardware.
It isn't how they wanted it, but you like I said, in terms of what real effect it's going to have, I don't think it's going to be that.
It's going to have more effect on EA's games being not selling as well, I think, until after Wii Sports Resort comes out.
Yeah, see, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because it's like, okay, so they're doing the right thing. It's as a Motion Plus will be available. They're doing bundles. And some people might end up buying those games kind of because it's like, oh, I want to buy a Motion Plus now. I want to see what it's like now, kind of the novelty of it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when it's going through that launch period, it hasn't had Wii Sports Resort already popularize it for them.
Right.
So, in a sense, they are kind of still getting the shaft a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see it that way, too. It definitely kind of goes both ways with that. But, I mean, moving away from the timing elements here, we know that, going back to hardware sales, in Japan, hasn't been going all that well for a little while. Not that they're that bad, but it's definitely some strong software for PS3 has kind of pushed that up. Mm-hmm. Whereas, certainly compared to last year when you had Wii Fit, Brawl, all that, Wii sales are way down because, you know, all they've had in Japan is like the new play control stuff.
Yeah.
pretty much the start of this year, which is not going to drive hardware in the same way, certainly. But is Wii Sports Resort the title to actually turn that around in Japan, do you think? I mean, are people actually going to buy a Wii for Wii Sports Resort?
No,
I don't think so.
Because people in Japan already had to buy Wii Sports. So if you were...
And there's 3.5 million people in Japan that have done that.
I don't think anybody who didn't go buy a Wii and Wii Sports is going to say, you know what, this Wii Sports Resort looks good, because honestly, Wii Sports Resort looks like a weaker title.
I don't think it's as immediately kind of relatable. It's a little less like, you know, like bowling, tennis, golf. I mean, there's a reason why those were the ones they chose game.
Monster Hunter G just came out, I think, so I think Japan.
Yeah, see,
will be
now
all
right. That's what I was going to. I think stuff like Monster Hunter and, yeah, like G is like the remake one, right? Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a remake of the first one or with extra content, or I can't remember. The Monster Hunter.
And then you've
releases.
Got, was it, you've got Monster Hunter 3, which is obviously the original one that's specifically for Wii. And then, of course, more down the line, you've got Dragon Quest X. These sorts of things will drive hardware because these have pre-existing fan bases that may well have had no particular reason to buy a Wii before, and then all of a sudden they have to.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and like I said, stuff like Wii Fit drives hardware sales because it's in some ways it's similar to Wii Sports, but it's quite different. It has a different appeal, it has an appeal totally its own that will get people to buy a system just for that. Whereas Wii Sports Resort, I mean, it's a sequel. that yeah. they want yeah. it to be a sequel. So I don't see that it has the kind of independent appeal that's necessarily going to boost hardware sales in Japan. So you might have to wait more for the Monster Hunters of the world before that actually turns around.
I mean,
there.
Do you think in terms of Wii Sports Resort, do you think that, that Nintendo has done a proper job of really even hyping it? Like if they want it to achieve the sales?
They've done awful job with that.
Let's be honest. I mean, that it's gone in a bunker since E3.
Yeah.
I
mean, supposedly there's nine other sports from the frisbee and all that.
Something went terterribly wrong with that game.
Supposedly there's like all these other sports, but we haven't seen any of them in like 10 months.
Well, you know, this is the standard MO for something went very bad in the game.
It's just all signs point to it.
This is a major title, and every single hallmark of a bad.
The timing issue definitely lends some kind of substantiation to that uneasiness, I think. I mean, it may very well have turned out quite well in the end. I don't know. But that, it's just interesting to me that literally this was the big E3 announcement.
And people played it, didn't
they? Yes.
Yeah, there are good impressions on it.
Yeah, Johnny played it.
When's the last time a game people played went into the Nintendo bunker? This isn't a rhetorical question. There is an answer. Can you think of it?
Disaster
Day of Crisis.
Project Hammer. Project Hammer as well.
Yes, Project Hammer.
But that has never returned, so I suppose
that got
cancelled.
I mean, that's dead.
Yeah. But I mean, it is a little. It's a little troubling. I'll definitely agree with that. The way it's gone, but it may well turn out really well in the end because maybe they just had difficulties with using the Motion Plus that when you overcome them, the game is really good. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think it will turn out well just because it has to. Yeah, I mean, they're not going to release it until they are absolutely 100% satisfied with it.
Sales-wise, I'm sure it will do very well. You know, like I said, I mean, you know, I'm not convinced it's going to drive hardware, like, you know, in a really significant way. Software-wise, I think you could be pretty confident, you know, just in itself, I think you could be pretty confident it's going to do the job.
Yeah.
I think it's going to really depend on how Nintendo markets it come probably about a month from now and see how they handle it. I mean, it is Wii Sports 2. So, I mean, if they can properly get that out to people, like, I think these DS commercials that they have running now are pretty effective. I think
I think you've seen that with, like, what Layton is doing in America. Like, that's been, like, more than a year, and it's got this uptick, and that's because they've marketed it, you know. I mean,
it's a very weird uptick, too, because it didn't do poorly before, but it never felt like it hit its market.
No, it was not a big before. Now all of a sudden it shows up in the top 20 when it's been on sale for more than a year. I mean, that's marketing right there. I mean, I don't think there's any argument with that. But I think Nick's point is very good. And also, how do you relate it to Wii Sports in the sense that you've got this element of like, okay, so there's this new thing that makes it better in terms of the controller better.
It's got fencing now.
But it's not taking the old sports and making those better. It's using them in new sports. You know, that's a little awkward.
It's a little harder to sell. I mean, the thing is, I think with Wii Sports, it benefited to a great degree off of the newness of the Wii platform itself, whereas Wii Sports Resort, I can see it kind of being perceived as an incremental kind of improvement. Not really something, you know, worth going out necessarily being a must-have title.
Well, I think you know, certainly the brand will do a lot for it. And the other thing is just, what are some of these other nine games?
Yeah.
Because that's going to be the big selling point in the end. What's in it?
Yeah.
The fencing, I think, is big. I think that's kind of obvious one. The other ones, yeah, we'll see.
You have to wonder why they haven't said anything about them. It seems kind of odd. Like, what is it?
It is. I mean, it is. It really is. Because, it's been quite a while now. You can almost forget that. All right, well, we'll move on a couple other things. Punch-Out, about a month away, and we started to hear a few more things about the additional kind of content that's in the game beyond being a kind of remake of sorts of the original. So you've got multiplayer, which you kind of talked about the possibility of that before. I know, John, you kind of expressed a desire for multiplayer, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we've got it. It's split screen ish in a way.
Ish.
You do mm-hmm. actually have a split screen where it's sort of little Mac v little Mac, but if one of you kind of fills up a meter quick enough, which sounds quite a lot like the super meter in like Tatsunoko versus Capcom or something, you turn into Giga Mac, who's like a big hulking guy like your opponent.
You unleash your man's ultimate weapon.
And it actually goes away from being split screen into single screen, where the person who became Giga Mac is like the opponent. and then the other person is Little Mac, and you keep fighting that way. So I guess nice that it isn't just pure split screen, because it wouldn't really capture what Punch Out is about very much if it were. Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean, I like the idea that one of you is the Hulking bad guy kind of thing.
I'm
curious how this is going to play in multiplayer, since the game's whole premise is, you know, figuring out your opponent's pattern and exploiting it.
Well, that's the thing, when you're the big guy, do you, have big tells, or, do you have that's...
Like a pause before you punch?
Yeah, is that the kind of trade-off in terms of, if you hit, it'll be way more powerful, but it's kind of, more kind of predictable. I'm certainly glad that they've had a go at it, but it's kind of, obviously the jury's very much out, but it is a little bit, like you said, James, it's definitely a challenge fundamentally to adapt the punch out sort of template to multiplayer, but it certainly looks like they made an interesting sort of fist of it. The other thing that we've heard about very recently is this title defense mode. So basically it sounds like when you kind of go through it and you become the champ, you're then going to be able to sort of play some of the people you've defeated again, but now they're actually going to fight differently and presumably harder, which I think is kind of important for people that have played Punch-Out before, because, if you can literally beat King Hippo in exactly the same way as on NES, I remember how to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just going to do it first try.
Yep.
So I would like to be able to fight him where he doesn't use exactly the same tactics as before. So this could actually be quite an important thing, and I would like to hope that maybe you could mix in a few new characters as well, but I don't know whether it'll just be all the same old guys. And then the last thing that we've heard about recently is some opponent specific little challenges, like achievement style things, so if you can knock people out in a certain time, or one of the ones we've heard about is where you actually have to lose to Glass Joe having knocked him down 3 times. I suppose it's way more difficult than just beating him, so that's kind of funny. But taken together, all these things, do you think it's coming together as a package that is something you think is worth the full retail price?
I don't know.
Because there have been reservations expressed about that.
It's going to be tough, I have to say. I mean, it's really going to come down to how polished does it feel, how many times can you play it, I've been leaning towards no all along.
Yeah. But
I'm concerned about challenge, actually. I mean, the other ones really thrived on being so challenging to learn the techniques to get through the game.
Yeah, but eventually it got to the point where we're not just memorizing the procedures, but you learned the methodology to beating those games,
right?
I mean, they were quite intricate, and obviously people could get to a point where they could do because Super Punch had a speed run, like a time attack mode, and things like that, and I think that these challenges and things kind of bring that back in a sense. And I like the idea, and like I said, with the title defense, hopefully that'll be a way of kind of differentiating, for people that haven't played it before, just the sort of journey through the characters will be fine for them, whereas for people who have played Punch Out and Super Punch Out, they can do that and that's fun, but then the next will be where the challenge and the sort of you really kicks in. Hopefully it will be hard enough, but for me, I mean, Punch Out's the first game I can really remember playing, so it has this really strong nostalgia factor for me. I am the market for this game, basically, and I will probably pick this up almost certainly, because unless there's something goes very wrong with the reception of it, because I love Punch Out. They've nailed the look for sure.
It does look great.
Absolutely,
it really does.
And it does. I'm so glad that it does revel in its sort of stereotypical qualities rather than try and sanitize them or play them down.
Yeah.
I mean, that is Punch Out for better or worse, and to deny that...
Well, that is boxing for better and worse, to be honest.
They kind of play up to it in the real thing. They don't exactly try and present themselves as sober, reasonable people.
No. Any profession in which someone like Iron Mike Tyson can excel for a decade pretty much proves that sober, rational people are gone.
Yeah.
And so, I think I'm sold pretty much, but the rest of you not quite.
Yeah, I'll wait for the reviews. I'm really curious to see. I mean, it would be nice if there was... I'm just curious to see... do we know if it's going to use Wii Connect 24 at all?
They haven't really said a lot about that, no.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard about balance board and, stuff like that, but not so much about online sort of stuff. I mean, I don't think there's going to be online scoreboards for like time attack and stuff, which is a shame.
Yeah, I agree.
But
yeah.
I'm not certain about that. I don't want to sound categorical about that. And there's many things we don't know about this yet. There's still a month to go, and people have played it. There's impressions on our site from Aaron, which, you know, well worth reading and whatnot. But we certainly don't know anywhere near everything. Most of the stuff that's sort of been okay to talk about is just the first circuit, mm-hmm. which is, you know, even though Punch is not a big game, that's still a pretty trivial sort of slice of it. All right, well, I think I'm going to close out the show with a special bonus story that I'm calling the Specular Palooza, because we've had something cropped up where basically people said they've heard from retailers that Nintendo have said to them, you know, we can't tell you what it is, but you're going to want to dedicate a lot of shelf space.
Right. In fact, a VP of, was it GameStop? Yeah, a VP mm. at GameStop yeah, somebody came right like out that. And said this in an interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he said that there's something, a key property from Nintendo is coming. You know, not your average Nintendo Christmas.
Not Excitebots.
Not Wii Music and Animal Crossing from last year is also what I presume he means to a large extent. Something really big for Nintendo, even for Nintendo, is coming in the holiday, and they're being told, get ready for it. But of course, beyond that, nothing. We don't know anything. Presumably because this is not something that's previously announced. It's not going to be Spirit Tracks or anything like that. So I'm opening the floor to wild, unfounded speculation predictions on this topic. John...
I'm going to say Donkey Kong Jr. Math with Wii Motion Plus Control.
I like it. I think it's got a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be big with the casual set.
It's going to be big.
All right, let's joke answers first. So John's got his. Nick, your joke answer.
Well, actually, I was talking to Matt Casamassina over at IGN, and he assured me it's Kid Icarus.
That is a total joke answer. That I will agree with that. In the sense that even if it were true, they're not telling the retailers to lay out the red carpet for Kid Icarus. All right, James, joke answer. Well, you're probably going to give me two joke answers. Start with one.
well, Nick is half right. It is Kid Icarus, but it's actually Kid Icarus Party.
Are they doing like what they did with Namco and Sega with F-Zero and all that, but instead they're actually doing it with Ubisoft? Any truth in that?
In fact, it's not just Ubisoft. It's Ubisoft's team that developed their ever so popular Z line.
Yeah,
so it's actually going to be Kid Icarus Babies Party, to be specific.
Winged babies flying around.
Playing party games, yes. It's going to be a big seller. We're talking
Kid Icarus My First Wings.
Yes.
We're all looking forward to that.
Now,
God, have I got to do a joke answer? I haven't thought of one. All right, I'm going to go around to serious answers because of that.
Well, I do have the other one that I was going to do in case somebody went with Kid Icarus, which... You did, yeah. Unfortunately. Which was going to be Disaster Day of Crisis Snap.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I like it. Right. John, have you a more considered response?
I'm thinking possibly Wii Fit 2, maybe.
See, that's definitely the one angle of it, because that would be a pretty huge Nintendo property.
And it would take up real estate space.
But I mean, it wouldn't have to, because it could just be like a new disc. They wouldn't. But I assume
they would bundle it with. But there would be two SKUs. There would be two SKUs. There'd be a free SKU.
Yeah, there would be.
So it would take up space.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, that makes sense.
If you think about it, GameStop doesn't display a copy for everyone they own. They just put up the dummy box. So you have to really think into why would they tell them to save space? Because Nintendo knows how GameStop operates.
Yeah, that's the whole save space thing. Just sounded kind of like just an offhand comment.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know exactly how literal that is or whatever, but, you know. So Wii Fit, I think, is definitely on the table. Let's mm-hmm. be, some sort of addendum to Wii Fit or anything like that would be huge.
Yep.
So as we've talked about the install base of the balance board at this point, Nick, care to venture any further?
I don't know if I really have a guess. I mean, I think the guy's just full of it. Nintendo is so tight-lipped, I don't believe it.
Well, and also, I mean, of course they're going to have something big or something they think is big Christmas.
You think so?
They probably thought Wii Music was big, you know?
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, this strays into non-news into the non-news territory.
Well, that is why it is the final bonus Speculapalooza story. It's frivolous.
Yeah.
But you don't... You don't think anything you'd like to go with?
I wish I could think of something. I mean, the only thing that really comes to mind is maybe some sort of follow-up to Mario Galaxy.
I personally think if you're going to go with anything that's like, that's not in the Wii Fit category or the Wii brand category, Mario is the most possible because the way they kind of talked about all the Zelda and the Mario teams are working on something.
Yes, we know. Yeah. Otherwise, they'd be called unemployed.
Yeah, of course they are. But the point is that Spirit Tracks exists and it's showing up at the end of the year supposedly. So if the Mario people were on the same timetable, it's not necessarily impossible that. And also, I mean, it's not something they've done. I mean, in terms of take a Mario game and then spin a sort of fundamentally similar successor out of it very quickly.
No,
but I think Mario Galaxy is so good, and yet the sales were good but not astronomical, that they may feel that there's more mileage to be had out of that.
I mean,
that they can pump it again for something. I mean, they haven't really done this since, I guess, Super Mario 3 and Super Mario World were quite close together, but they were for different systems. Mm-hmm, and they were quite similar games. They were quite close together. And, you know, they were both huge successes, but the fact that one was a launch title for a different system kind of breaks that. So it would be kind of unprecedented, but I'd like to think that's probably the best case scenario. I think we agree on that.
And you know what? I guess I'm thinking Wii, but new Super Mario Brothers 2.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, big one too. So.
Yeah, I mean, even though it is, it's still in the top 20, but it's still in the top 20 on the NPDs and stuff. But you know, I mean, there's no doubt that has to be something of a consideration as well. James, serious answer.
I actually am going the opposite direction. I think it is a Zelda game because
so you think they're going to go double dip on Zelda?
They've done it before with things like Metroid, and they've done it before.
They've also done. I mean, like, weren't the Oracle games and Majora's Mask quite close together?
I mean, it's been a long time since Twilight Princess, and they still have yet to really have a game built from the ground up for Wii.
Well, and not just that, they told us explicitly while Twilight Princess was still in development, they had already begun the preliminary work on a Wii Zelda game.
On an actual Wii Zelda rather than one that was a GameCube, translation. I mean, but of course, the complication compared with stuff like Oracle, and the Metroid Fusion, Metroid Zero Mission example, for instance. Metroid Prime, Metroid Fusion example is that Retro was working on one while R&D1 was working on the other. In this case, Nintendo EAD has sort of taken over the handheld series themselves, which I don't know whether it leaves them with the leeway to be doing a console version in parallel that could literally come out at the same.
I think what we're going to have here is that they're going to announce this game, but they're not actually going to ship this game.
In the context of the retailer.
Yeah, if they are referencing something for the retailers in that respect, I think what we are most likely to see in terms of a console game is maybe a B-list franchise that's going to be given an A-list treatment.
See, that's the thing. This only kind of makes sense to me if it's real A-list stuff.
I don't think they're going to turn around Super Mario Galaxy again, because I feel like that team is probably on something else right now.
Maybe they are. I mean, but on the other hand, like I said, I mean, what they did in that game is well worth mining for more. You could have said the same thing about Mario 64.
It's just not been their MO for.
But
for
having said that, what happened with Mario 64 is that they started making Zelda, whereas now you've got EAD Tokyo, which is completely separate.
Well, wait, Star Fox.
Well, see, that's the thing now. I mean, the most recent Listen Up, they kind of said like at the end, like Star Fox, F-Zero, they haven't done these, and it's like, I kind of find it hard to believe that Nintendo is, you know, if there's truth to this, which obviously Nick has kind of said, you don't really know, but I mean, Nintendo saying, you better clear yourself space, we've got Star Fox.
It
just seems ridiculous. There's no way. F-Zero, no way.
Think of the PR staff we are dealing with at Nintendo right now. They aren't the best.
To me, there are three candidates. Right, something that's Wii branded, most likely a Wii Fit thing. Mario and Zelda, that is it.
Well, the thing is, you have to realize too that Nintendo is talking to GameStop here, and what GameStop cares about are the real huge like franchises, stuff like Halo, you know, Gears of War, stuff
Guitar
like
Hero.
The huge things, like, you know, the stuff that really, really moves millions and millions of copies.
I think this is Nintendo playing GameStop. I think they legitimately knew.
You think they're going to get them to reserve a bunch of shelf space can't have because they're then going to fill it with stuff.
I think they know that because GameStop is the primary retailer of video games as a video game-centric store, they do get a lot of press time where their executives give interviews. And they do. If you read general business media, GameStop people get quoted all the time when the video game industry comes up.
Well, they're huge.
Sure, yeah. No,
Nintendo, to tell GameStop something like this, when GameStop is trying to tell something to tell their shareholders as the market softens on them, look, there's still something coming. This could be a very good tactical move for Nintendo to get some free public relations time.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess what it points to, if there's any validity to it, is something will be announced at E3.
And we will be disappointed.
Something will be announced at E3 that we don't yet know about that's coming out at Christmas. I mean, that's kind of...
That's the implications, at least.
That's what I'm taking from it, you know. And I mean, that would be really... I mean, that would be kind of shocking if that was actually... Like, if that was Mario. It's like, here's a Mario game, it's coming out in 6 months. That would be shocking.
Yeah, because those games...
I think the Wii Fit angle is more likely, to be honest.
The thing about that, though, is have they ever announced a Mario or Zelda game the same year it came out? In the last decade?
I'm struggling to think of
No, because those games get delayed like crazy.
Well, even if they don't, it's usually just like a year, and obviously they don't do it in January and December.
No, they give you... First E3, they give you a taste, and then the next E3... I mean, for God's sake, Mario was playable, almost 2 years before it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it would be, but they have... I mean, they've changed their MO a little bit. I think we can agree with that. I still think, I mean, yeah, when you're talking about that kind of turnaround, you know, something like a Wii Fit type thing would make a lot of sense. So I would have to, from the net result of the Speculapalooza, that would probably be the horse I'd back.
Golden Sun Golf.
Camelot makes a triumphant return.
Combining their love of golf and their love of somewhat generic RPGs.
With like a whole cast of characters that nobody knows.
Yes.
Be awesome.
I have to go walk in the desert.
A whole cast of Dijin!
All right. If I walk in this desert for the next 6 hours, I'll find the Jin golf ball.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, that's enough of more baseless than usual speculation. And we're going to close out the show with just a couple of things before we finish. First of all, we always want your emails, so send them in to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Didn't have too many to work with this week, so definitely fill the bag up, and we'll get to that next week. Also next week, we're starting the next retroactive. That'll be retroactive number 5, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for Super Ghouls and Ghosts, as we've previously referenced, on the Virtual Console for 800 points. Also, you can get it on the GBA. It has some extra levels and stuff, but that's what we'll be playing. You can go to the forum thread at nintendoworldreport.com/forums.
And watch them bitch about the game. They've already started. They've already started. It's great.
You could go in there, complain, laud it, whatever, join the discussion, get involved.
Call them pansies and tell them it's an easy game.
Yeah, it's a man's game. Put hair on my chest, whatever.
Grow some balls.
Screw Levitra. I just played Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Whatever. You know, I mean, these sorts of things. Get involved with that. Also, if you enjoy the show, or if you don't, I suppose, but I would prefer generally for the people that like the show to go and review us on iTunes.
I hate this show, Sam Carl Castaneda.
Oh, don't give me ideas about what to do to his podcast. You could go and rate us on iTunes. You don't have to write a review. You can just give a star rating if that's more something you'd like to do. So definitely it'll help more people find the show on iTunes and things. So give us the feedback. We certainly appreciate it. And lastly, I just want to say, obviously, Johnny wasn't with us tonight for reasons I'm not going to go into detail about, but suffice it to say that I wish we were recording under better circumstances, and our thoughts are very much with Johnny at the time, and I look forward to having him back soon, hopefully. So I'm going to thank John and James for joining me as usual.
Always a pleasure. Guys. Thank you.
Fantastic show.
And Nick, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
And look for his ExciteBots review fairly soon, I should hope.
Yeah. And look for John and I's review sometime in the next 6 months.
Yeah, look for James.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You bet.
Look for John and James reviews of things like Age of Empires.
Always a shiny example for the rest of the site to follow.
That is a game that will last you a long time. So enjoy that.
Ages.
It is a game in itself. Okay, so until next week, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.
He's got standards.
I've got standards. Yes, exactly.
I'm not gonna.
I bought Big
standard.
Mother Trucker. I've got standards. I mean, come on. How can that game not be a terrible game? It's called Big Mother Trucker.
I know. I thought it was a lock. I thought it was.
And then I started doing some research. I'm like, oh, son of a bitch! Come on, really?